What's up everyone, this is Dariusz Kalbaczyk, co-founder of NG Poland, JS Poland, Angular Master .dev and Workshop Fest.dev. Welcome back to the JavaScript Master Podcast. Today, we've got a special guest from Ukraine, COO and VP of Delivery at MEVLLC, ladies and gentlemen, Andriy Lukanenko. Hi, Andriy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
For those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself.
I'm Andriy Lukyanenko, I'm 35 years old. I'm COO, like Chief Operations Officer of company called MEV or MEV. And also I'm VP of Delivery at this company. As COO, I'm responsible for running business operations. So it means numbers, structure, business processes, people, so aligning business level, tactical level, operational level things. Also, I'm in charge of strategic project management office that is responsible for transforming organization for future growth. And as VP of delivery, I'm responsible for delivering high quality services related to software development. I think now it's 20% COO, 80% VP of delivery, but I'm planning to move more to COO position.
How did your adventure in programming begin?
First time I heard about programming was when I was 12 years old in school. I was studying in physics, mathematics, lyceum. And I think it was eighth grade, we had informatics. And before that, we had like binary arithmetics, like zero, ones, arithmetic with big numbers doing on papers. In seventh grade and eighth, we started to learn programming from diagramming block schemes and then putting into like Pascal and trying to execute it. The main challenge for me was that I didn't have a computer in those time at home. So every time I tried to do programming and we had informatics two times per week, I almost every time I was not successful because of those errors. You forgot to put some mark or doing something wrong, and 45 minutes was not enough to write even basic program. I mean, sometimes it was successful. But hopefully my parents at summer break between the 8th and 9th grade bought me a computer. So, and in 2 months, I was able to learn all the school program from 7th to 11th grade and execute almost every program I had there. I joined it. But for some reason, we had another 9th grade teacher of informatics and I had to break for 3 years programming until university where I studied computer science.
Can you share about your professional journey and how it led you to your current role at MEV?
Yeah, sure. I started to work between second and third course of university and as freelancer, web developer. And of course, I was doing some tasks for other students in Ukraine. So it was like a hobby both. I was learning. So I was really enjoying doing that, right? So every time, especially if it's from another group, right? I started as a freelancer. It was PHP. For half of the year, I work as PHP developer freelance without mentor, teacher. It was just me and clients. It was a nice experience. The first thing I learned, it was time management because I had to organize myself. It was remote work. I think they were from Moscow for some reason. Some of my friends advised me them. It was like 2008, I think. And after that, so they were really happy about the work I do. And then I started to work with MEV as a part-time employee, freelance, also PHP. In the very beginning, it was some WordPress, Drupal, and then it was Zend framework. And I liked working with Zend framework, this stuff, because I was reading a lot at this time. And I saw in practice, in action, how design patterns might be used. And I think in 2011, 12, when I got my master's degree, I started to work full time as an employee. At MEV, I was, I think, in this period of time more like senior engineer because I had like 4 years experience, I think five almost, working there. And in 2013, I started to be a team lead project manager. And at the same time, like MEV was more like boutique agency. And so it was like from 5 to 10 employees remotely all over the world in the same time working there. We're doing pretty complex projects with PHP. It was enterprise-ready projects using sometimes Python, other stuff, also like mobile application. And yeah, but after that, when I understood that, okay, I really like programming. I like architecture. I like system thinking. Also, I'm good at leading people. For some reason, I felt like leading others, it's something that I'm better maybe than even organizing myself. And I took initiative and proposed to founder, let's go offline. Let's try to build office. Because I can work with juniors. I can work, let them grow faster. It can be a great benefit for us. And we can grow as an organization faster. And I tried doing that in 2013. And in the year, I think we hired 10 people. So it was 5, and then in Ukraine, and then 15. And in the next year, 30. And from 30, 50. From 50, 100. And we were growing. In 2015, we opened office in Lviv. First 2 years, I was like doing everything by myself. So I was like team lead, architect, head of administration Ukrainian. In 2015, we opened office in Lviv. And I hired first HR person. And this person was doing everything like HR, recruiting, all this stuff. And then why COO? Because you see, like, I naturally was like responsible for the delivery services, right? So I was working with project managers, other architects, software developers, and also I had to make sure that all the offices, people in Ukraine, like Lviv, Cherkasy, people who work remotely, they are administrated well. Now it's not only Ukraine, it's also Europe, right? And we have administration in the United States because MEV is like American, it's not a Ukrainian company originally, but mostly I think 90% of people is like Europe and Ukraine right now. Still more in Ukraine, but more and more right now in Europe. We had head of delivery PMO from Poland. So we have some success in this area last year. But yeah, that's why I'm here. So it's my natural growth from being a software developer who liked to use system thinking, organizing things, others. And yeah, I think for me, I feel about myself like COO with product thinking. So I really like agile methodologies. I like product thinking. And because of agile, I think I really like to be a manager. Because in traditional environment, I was struggling with my previous managers. I was struggling as an engineer. And because I learned how to work in agile environment, I started to grow. Other people started to grow faster. And not only grow, but also to enjoy the things they do. So that's why I try to promote this management style, help other developers to be not afraid of being managers, leaders. For me, it's very important because, as you know, developers, they're usually pretty introverted and they don't like to manage others, work with people. That's, I think, my main area of expertise from what I feel, right? And yeah, so like combination of technology, delivery and business operations. I think business operations here is like less, but I need to learn more because we want our organization to grow, and that's why we need to scale it.
What does MEV specialize in, and how does it distinguish itself in the tech industry?
It's a good and hard question because we are asking ourselves all the time. So overall, we really just do complex software development. Right, so we have some domains where we have a bigger experience. But usually our approach is very pragmatic and universal because we cannot say clients we didn't work with real estate or other domain or healthcare, right? This is why we're all with org domains and the same with technology, right? We call it technology agnostic. So I can't imagine right now website without data pipeline. So it's absolutely normal right now to have a traditional like in SaaS application service to have data pipeline, web applications, some machine learning components, or even now it's AI, and also blockchain. It's absolutely normal situation. Sometimes you don't have machine learning, sometimes you don't have blockchain, but usually it's a combination of things, and architectures right now are very complex. And because of the technologies development, rapid technology development, we can use much easier. So just full stack developers can use some AI or machine learning or work with blockchain, learn it faster, implementing on their systems without any needs and any complications. And so that's why we are more technology agnostic. Yeah, it's like a core technology is GVM and Node.js, but with all other areas. So we have data, we have machine learning, we have AI, even firmware. And with the business domains, it's, I think, almost 50% of everything we do is related to healthcare. It can be like healthcare insurance domain. It can be medical technology device. With one of our clients, we help them to implement diagnostic devices to help to detect COVID or different kinds of flu. And you can buy it in pharmacy, right? And we do like SaaS part, we do mobile part, and we do this firmware part. So it's nice. We also had clients with agriculture technologies doing pretty similar things. We have with other domains, we have experience with real estate. We have a client from Hawaii. So, and once we were traveling to them, even flying in a helicopter, because they have this map of their lands to understand how application operating, and they were showing us that from like, helicopter view, how it's working. So it was really nice. And we really helped them to re-engineer their system from old pure .NET to cloud application. So, I mean, it was nice. Also, we have experience with consumer electronic companies, helping to build them products. It's one of the hugest in South Korea. And the same with like retail sportswear. We have a really big client from United States in sportswear. We help them to provide digital experience in their stores. So it's more like nice right now to manage their screens, animations, all those stuff. It's like built with the HTML5. So it's also more nice. Like it's WebGL. So it's not a common thing to use. So yeah, that's where we are. I think healthcare, real estate, B2B SaaS, consumer electronics.
What are the key elements of a pragmatic approach to a software engineer's career development?
Pragmatism is one of our core values in company. From some period of time, it started to become for us very important. So we're really focused on our values. And I think that in business, in software development, to be pragmatic is very, very important, especially nowadays. And pragmatic is something that is focused on facts, on reality, right? And the opposite to it is something like focused more on emotions, biases. And it's as in every industry, area of knowledge, there are a lot of biases and myths around it. The same with software development and career development. And I think the main bias or myth was announced by Steve Jobs in his famous speech in Stanford University more than 30 years ago. He told, follow your passion, find the job you love. And he was lying to people because he didn't do it. At the time he started producing computers, he was not a fan of doing that. It was just circumstances, the luck, right? The situation, it was just a good situation for him when where he used his skills, knowledge, experience, and convert to build his company, right? And that's why he was more focused on his mastery, on doing things, on practicing things. He was not thinking about passion this time. If he would focus on passion, he would become a monk, right? That was his passion. And in reality, there so there is a nice book called Be So Good So They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport. I think it's the best guide for career development for everybody. I mean, for me, as a pragmatic person, that's the best. I on Goodreads, I hear a lot of bad feedbacks about it. But usually, I mean, I think it provides very good concept of two types of mindset. Passion mindset and craftsman mindset. Passion mindset is like, find the job that will give you passion. Or in other words, focus on what world will give to you. And craftsman mindset says, find the job where you can produce the value. Don't produce the value to the world. Do not wait when the world can come to you and give you a passion, right? And another good phrase is of pragmatic approach is like, don't focus on your passion, focus on career capital. And this craftsman approach is about focusing on career capital. Career capital is just like capital in economics. It's skills, knowledge, connections, I don't know, some other assets then you can use in future and convert to get more benefits from your career. And I think that's key elements of pragmatic approach, focusing on career capital and craftsman mindset versus passions.
How can companies support software engineers in pragmatically planning their career paths?
Companies should help people with defining the right approach to planning, career and everything. As a company that follows MEV, as a company follows agile principles, we know that plan is nothing, but planning is everything, right? That's why the same with career. It's very dangerous just focusing on one path, a one direct path, without ability to change direction, because sometimes we don't know, right? One of the key elements of career building career capital is first is you need to practice, right? Because without practicing, you will not be able to learn. And practice is also very important. It's very important to practice in the way you can receive a feedback, right? Because when you receive feedback, positive, negative, you can learn. And another thing is dispositions, right? Understanding your dispositions. Some people by nature better in, I don't know, in drawing, in creative things. Some are more organized. But there are tons of things that makes us different. And it doesn't mean that we are bad, right? It means that we're just different. And we can convert it to become better at something or struggle with doing that. That's why I think when we have a pass, right, company can help to set the goal first. When you know your goal, you need to find a place where you can practice and receive a feedback. So company can help you with allocation to the right project. Then if you feel that you are doing well, then you continue being replaced. No, then company can help you to be reallocated to another place, practice better skills, or maybe to choose different paths or correct your paths. It's not only about horizontal growth, it's vertical, it's different directions. And also, I think HR team can help you to understand your dispositions better. It's different types of personality tests, profiling. We are not doing that at, like, we're doing it at leadership level. We are trying to learn it, but personally, I'm trying to understand myself all the time. I work with DISC, maybe you know, like DISC is like red, yellow, green, and blue things, right? That defines your personality type, and in more advanced version, define how you behave in stress. So it's like, it's very informative. It's very simple. Big Five, MBTI, all the things, they describe different things about you. You can use in different situations. For example, I, in the DISC, I'm DC. I'm like red, decision, and C, conscious, like consistent. So my personality type is very managerial and not superhuman friendly. Those who are yellow and green, they are more human reads. And for me, for example, I know that my green area is very low. So I'm voyager. I know that I cannot work on routines work. I need to change projects, environment. I need dynamic environment to progress. Otherwise, I struggled. Right? This is why nobody told me that. But when I was a freelancer, oh, it was horrible for me to understand. I didn't know that I was trying to follow all the advices from lifehacker.com, from other sources, but it was really hard. I was not progressing. But when I understood myself better, my dispositions started to work in other positions or change the environment, it helped me a lot. So that's why I think HR teams can help with that. And if a company has it, it's really good. Or at least appreciate that. So you are different and you are this kind of person. And that can be beneficial for both sides.
What are common mistakes software engineers make while planning their careers?
I think the main mistake is like using passion mindset, and that leads to dissatisfaction, right? It's the same as like, let's create YouTube channels. I have a passion to do it. You can have your first subscribers in the months, two, half of the year, but then you are not interesting anymore for them. You are not receiving subscribers, right? And your passion is falling down. And passion is the result of mastery, right? If you choose the mastery, if you choose Grossman approach, then you will try to improve yourself in filming on, I don't know, on other skills. You learn how YouTube works, on how the algorithm works, right? Other things. So you will focus on yourself and producing value to the world and will become better and you will grow. And then you can decide, right? Do you want to move forward or no? But you will have this career capital. With this approach, I think you can do almost anything. With passion mindset, I think people will try to change different career paths, different like product management, engineering management. I don't know. Try to be DevOps or something else, but that's it without getting experience. I think overall, there are some details. It's hard for me to say, but I think the mindset, right, is the main mistake, using the wrong mindset from the very beginning. Especially, I think it's very important when you're in the very beginning of your career, because you are gaining the most capital there. Then you are not growing so fast, right? At the very beginning, you can grow fast. As you know, I like example with I used to play Heroes of Might and Magic 3. It's like you have a hero and an army, and some people, they are, for example, my wife, when she's playing and she's just collecting things around. So in like few hours of playing, she can be like level 2. And other people, like me in the very beginning, I was trying to build a castle, build economy. I was trying to avoid conflicts. So I was not getting a lot of experience. And my hero was like 5 level, had a lot of money, a huge army. And then computer hero came to me with level 20. I have 5. And just with one magic spell, he destroyed me in my army. And his castle, he has less money, less... smaller castle, not so well developed as mine, with dragons and all this stuff. But he still, like, just with one spell, destroyed me. Because he had this career capital, is this experience, or he was practicing, and used his dispositions, like his area, all those stuff. So, I think we have a lot of people in our industry who has 10 years experience, for example, and they called seniors. And you, and every time they were working one company, but their main mistake was they every year they were repeating the same experience, so they were not growing. And then they try to find another job, another company, and they cannot, because they are like between junior and middle in reality. Because you need to practice and challenge yourself all these times, grow your experience. And they are like level 5 or 6 instead of 20 in 10 years. I think that's the main mistake. So try to find the place where you can practice and use your dispositions. That's, I think, the main advice.
Which skills are most viable for software engineers in today's rapidly changing technological environment?
I think, rapidly changing, right? So it's about the pace of changes. And for me, that means you have to learn faster. Just comparing to like older times, right? We had to learn a lot before by ourselves, because university will not give you all the information, because usually universities are focused on information that is really foundational, but in terms of like innovation, they are lacking like 5, 10, 20 years sometimes. So we're still using Pascal old version, like, or something like that. Now it's maybe better, but before that, when I was in university, it was horrible. And having core principle is great, understanding, like, but I think having skills that will allow you to learn faster, like in the book, the first 20 hours, right? I think it's really important, because sometimes nowadays you have to learn, even if you install some application, you need like Docker, you need IDE, you need something in AWS, you need Figma, you need tons of things to just run locally application, and you have to know how to learn with them. And 10 years ago, I just need, 2 tools or 3 to run, like we used SVN, Subversion, and IDE, and Apache, that's it, right? Now it's much more complicated, and with these microservices, serverless, different architectures. So learning fast is very important, but more important, I think, having the right mindset here, right? So I like to focus more, as in physics, on principles, less on skills, and growth mindset, it's very important. The opposite, it's fixed mindset. Some people, they're trying to, and we had a lot of this example in our company, they go to a project, one project, they try to, they write on Java with, Spring or Spring Boot, and they just learn this technology. They didn't look outside of the box. And then in a few years, they go to another project and they start to use the same things that they used in previous project. But the world changed. For example, like we have AOZero or Cognito. We don't have to write from scratch this technology, something like that, right? And when you do these background researches, when you open to new information, it's like you can convert this as career capital, and then with time come, you can capture benefits. And if you have fixed mindset, I learned it in my previous project, then I just repeat the same, and I'm afraid of new information. It's called fixed mindset or conservative. I'm close to new information. Then, it's not good for people, for a developer, for a company, because we can be in a bad situation where you have to learn. Or sometimes for us as a service company, we cannot compete with others because others provide more efficient architecture. So sometimes it's not about the code, it's about architecture, and more advanced architecture can be less expensive. And the budget we provide to our customers can be smaller, and our developers just like, we don't want to develop a new way, want to develop it in the old way. That's why learning fast and growth mindset, I think, it's 2 core things nowadays. All other things, they're also important, but they are the same. I think it's not me, Joel Spolsky. He wrote a very old article about overall what good software engineers should know, should focus on, right? And he told three key skills you need. First is writing, he told. But it's overall about communication. So you should be good at communicating things, documenting, writing, expressing, right? That's very important. The next one is economy. It's like understanding how business works. Because you are solving business problems. If you can be an entrepreneur, you can be just a developer, but that's important. And the next one he called C++. That's about coding, right? But it's not about high level only coding, but understanding the foundational principles to be able to solve problems with technology, right? And I think my point is, I'd like to use his position as foundation, and then add growth mindset and fast learning skills to evolve and grow faster.
How do career paths for software engineers evolve with technological advancements?
I was thinking about it a lot, and I think the way they work is different, right? But in terms of career paths, I'm not sure if there is a big difference. So I was even Googling, trying to understand what was the career path in Facebook, Google, like 10 years ago and now. I think it's the same. Maybe they start to have some other positions like site reliability engineer or platform engineer. But it's more related, I think, to the scale of the team, right? To such things like team topology, because when you're scaling your team, your development process, you need to find the principles how to scale. And now we know that all principles don't work, and these product-centric, they are more efficient. But overall, related to technology, I'm not sure that there are some significant changes. So I think it's pretty the same.
How can software engineers identify the best career paths that aligns with their skills and interests?
I also like to start from principle, right? So the path should not be like the line, direct line. So it should be like waves, right? That's why using Agile, like think big, act small, learn fast is the main principle, right? So have the principle. Do not afraid to make mistakes, right? But to start as a starting point, you have to understand your dispositions. And it's hard because how to choose the career, what to start? I started to work as a software engineer just because I didn't know that there is something else. Maybe if I try product management, or I definitely knew that design is not for me. I definitely knew that sales is not for me. But I knew that coding is fine. I like it. I like mathematics. It's just not people, so it's clear. That's why understanding your dispositions is very important. And to understand it, you need to practice. So at some point, you know that maybe in school, in university, you had some hobbies, right? Those hobbies, I'm pretty often ask people on interview about their hobbies because it tells about them a lot. For example, me, I was involved, my hobbies were related to sport. Team sport. I really enjoyed it. Not crafting, not I like some things. I was even trying to draw, to be an artist, but that's definitely not for me. But the coding, mathematics was absolutely okay for me in school. It was like 20% of my hobby. Playing computer games, where I need to solve problems, and competing with others. So I really understood that I'm good at competing. I feel like I don't like to fail. So I had to learn to fail. For people like me, it's very important because their career can be broken. And yeah, but trying from the childhood, from school, universities, different activities is very important because you get experience about yourself and understand your dispositions. Then you pick something and practice. And while you practice, you get an experience, you understand, a software developer, I understand I'm this kind of software developer. I'm good in leading or architecting, right? So career path of software, usually a career path for software developer is like engineering manager and maker. It's like CTO pass with a staff engineer, principal after senior, right? And another pass is managers, like team lead, engineering manager, director of engineering, VP of engineering. So it's two different paths in different organization, different things, but the principle, right? So one type of developers, they more construct big picture thinkers, visionaries, and another organize people. Also, you can go to product management. If you understand that you like more working with customers, with market, you understand economy, and yeah, you can do software development. I know a lot of people, I can do it. I'm not enjoying so much as working with customers, market, UI, UX, like building products, like combining all things together. I enjoy receiving end result. Try product management, right? Since you can go to product management, and there are a lot of products technology oriented. They are for developers, for cybersecurity expert, for like GitLab or GitHub or these kind of projects, monitoring software. There are a lot of products we are using as developers. You can write your SDK library, but you have to be product owner, right, to do it. Also, I know some people go just to sales or account management because if they are really good, for example, they are very supportive. Their empathy level is very high. They don't like to compete, but they are very nurturing by their nature. And at some point, to be honest, I really, when I was coding, it took so much energy for me, like emotional energy. It's so exhausting. And so I enjoyed it, but I mean, it's hard. People think that, 40 hours a week, it's just coding, that's it. No, it's pretty often it's context switching and you have to learn all the time. It's hard. And at some point you understand, I cannot be software developer anymore. It's exhausting me. But I'm good in this area, right? It's usually called unfair advantage, right? It's a thing that you get just by doing something in your life, and then you can convert to something else. I actually met a guy in Wroclaw sometimes a year ago in the pub, and he's a British guy, and he has a small recording studio. And his job is he's recording video for different companies, startups with his voice on top of that, because he was born in some Yorkshire in Great Britain with super British accent that is like favorable for everybody want to hear this accent. That's really unfair advantage. It's stupid not to use it, right? Not to convert it as a benefit. The same here. If you are good at technology, you can also be like entrepreneur, right? You can build your own product. You can be a product manager or even account manager, and that's fine. So there are multiple things to do. Some people go to HR direction. Like I know some people, they're becoming HR directors. Some people like me can be more operational or go to CEO level because service company is one and product company is another. So there are tons of ways to do it. But you need to understand your dispositions, and only by receiving constant feedback from the world is possible and adapting. So I think, overall, is understand your dispositions, set realistic goals, find the path, practice, and iterate.
Definitely practice, practice, and practice. This is the only way to find you like it or not. And usually, if you are good at something, you start to like it or love it. Usually, not always, but usually.
Yeah, but I still think that dispositions and unfair advantages is very important things to consider. Because, like passion is result of mastery, as you told, right? But sometimes, like Michael Phelps, you know, this famous sports athlete who is the champion, Olympic champion, few Olympic games. He like anatomically, his hands and his legs is like, he cannot lose, right? So his anatomy, is so good for that. It's very hard to compete with him. He just had to practice and even do maybe less than others, he'll be champion. The same like Maradona. So some people, they are so talented by nature, and you have to understand it. But what I see that sometimes you feel jealous regarding that. You look at some developer, some manager, say, wow, they're so good in doing that. And sometimes the reason is A, talent, B, unfair advantages. For example, their parents were, for example, when I was in physics and mathematics, I assume a lot of students had parents working in universities. as PhDs, as just teachers, and were in the, and they involve this children in different mathematical, physics, informatics activities. And in seventh grade, when I just learned about mathematics, a lot of people, a lot of students were competing with other on Olympiads programming. I was jealous, honestly, in a good way, because I wanted also to participate in them. But I have no computer, I have no skills, I have nothing. And it's hard, and it's really hard. Because in this school that it was that I entered in seventh grade, it's like special school that collect all the smartest, like physics, mathematics children. I was not the smartest. It's still like was the best in sport, not physics, mathematics. But comparing to them, they really were building their career from the like first grade there. They didn't want it. They just were involved in that. And it was very unfair advantage. And for those who also had talent, they work in Google right now and or other place. But what I learned that, okay, maybe I'm not good at it, but I started to focus on different methods, like time management techniques, how to improve myself. So I started to be a coach for myself, manager. And for this reason, I became a really good manager and coach for others. I enjoyed it. And this is great. I think the same with sport. Like Maradona, or in Ukraine, we have famous athlete Oleg Blokhin. He was the coach of Ukraine, Neon team, and in Dynamo Kyiv. He's not bad, a good coach, because he's so talented. He just hit the ball and go. Oh, that's it. He don't understand how he do it, right? He's like going to athletes say, do like me. And they're like, I can't do that, right? And for him, it's like, why can't you do this? It's so easy. And another example is like Jose Mourinho, who was not super successful as football player, or Mircea Lucescu, coach of Shakhtar Donetsk. I like reading biographies of different people, and I see like he was working 10 times more than others. He received his graduation at different universities. He wanted to be smart. He wanted to use his brain because he had no talent like other had. And that was his talent, his skill. That's why I think this is fine when somebody is more talented. Sometimes life is not fair, right? I mean, it's overall not fair. You have to understand it. The luck, right? And these unfair advantages and these positions, they can define a lot. The same with like Steven Jobs. But it should not stop you, right? Because you have to try something else. And the end of the day, pretty often those who more focus on craft, less on talent, they are ending much better than those who focus more on their talent and dispositions. So if you have talent, like dispositions and fair advantages, it's great in short term. But in long term, these things make you more lazy, and you less focus on mastery, on discipline, practicing, and you're not so successful in the end. Sometimes you are, but more often you're not. But those who are more disciplined, they are receiving unfair advantages by practicing. They are understanding the disposition by practicing. They are managing that. It's becoming their circle of influence, their passion. They are more confident. They can teach others. So I think for those who feel like, I'm surrounded by more smarter, talented people than I am, this is okay. Now it's this situation, but life is like, it's marathon. It's not a sprint, right? Be smart. Use the right strategies, and you'll get your success in the future, definitely.
How important is having mentors and coaches in the career development of a software engineer?
That's a good question. I was thinking about it because in my life, I think I had no mentors and coaches. But I'm a mentor for some people, and I had some coaches. So I think mentors and coaches, first of all, that's tools to achieve some goals. And as with every tool, you have to use it in the right way to solve the right problem. If you feel like, so the different people have put different meaning to these words. I'm usually referring to management 3.0 or agile management, and they have clear definition, like who is line manager, who is coach, who is mentor. So line manager is your boss, right? And if we talk about organization, so every employee has one boss, right? That's very important. Then he decides your career, your future in your organization. If you grow or no, if you receive salary increase or different positions, so that's very important. And then, for example, you are lacking some skills. For example, you are good at hard skills, but you want to improve presentation skills or English. And pretty often, you can assign a coach to do this. So the goal of coach is to, like, it's like a transactional goal. Now you are with this skill with level like 1, and you want to improve it to level 3. That's the goal of the coach, and it's very important. So they help you to achieve faster your goals with skills. And with mentor, I think it's somebody who inspire you, who help you to define the direction in your life, in career. So it's less professional, more inspirational thing. And I think all the 3 points are important. So sometimes you feel like you need to learn something faster and you cannot do it by yourself. Or you can, but you see that you have a lot of context right now, and putting extra context to your schedule is very complicated. That's why you use coach. That's great. If you see that you don't know what to do next, you don't have a long-term perspective or motivation, inspiration. I mean, inspiration and passion is different things, right? Sometimes, like for me, inspiration is like about idea of future, understanding that something having that leads you to a future, helps you to direct your energy somewhere. And with inspiration, I personally attended conferences. In 2010, 11, in Ukraine, we had small amount of conference. So now that's a lot. And some of them just put one per year. You just go there, you meet people, you listen to different ideas, and you return back home very inspired. Very inspired. So that's why for me it was like that. For some people, it depends maybe on your personality, on life circumstances, but for some people, mentors can help to define their future. This is also, but you have to understand your need. And after understanding that, I think you can use the right approach, because different people say that conference don't work, mentor don't work, coach don't work. That's bullshit. But I mean, maybe it's wrong coach or you set the wrong goal. Maybe there's more about it. But if you use right tools for right things, this can definitely work.
What are the differences in career paths between software engineers in startups versus those in large corporations?
It's maybe the same as with technology. So first of all, startups and corporations, right? What's the difference between them? I think maybe in the lifetime, right? So startup can live like for a few months, right? So your career can be very short in startup. Few years ago, Uber was called a startup. So it's right now the boundaries between corporation and startups are not so clear as before. And a lot of our clients, they are corporations, but we work with their innovation lab department, which is like startup, very, very startup. But overall, in startup, I think the difference more in the way of work, less in career, because I think overall career is the same. So principles, you're engineer maker or manager, like staff engineer pass or engineer manager pass. That's it. But the way you move to that might be different, because with startup, it's a huge level of uncertainty, right? And you have to learn to work with uncertainty. Less focus on technology. You have to work with multiple technologies. In corporations, you are more focused. Sometimes you have not so frequent releases, right? But even now, professionals want to release faster. So that's why the pace, your responsibilities, The level of uncertainty, they are different. So they define you. So with startup, you can learn more in a shorter period of time, I think. But career will be the same. So junior, middle, senior, the same corporation. But the way you move might be different. So I think becoming senior in startup might be a little bit easier, but with corporation, more attainable. When startup evolve and becoming like not corporation, but more like at some level, series A or B, right? So they are like moving to the next phase. They also should produce some good career paths to developers, which they often do. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes corporations don't have a great career path for developers. They are very traditional and outdated. That's why, as I told, boundaries are not clear right now, but and I think career path is pretty the same, but the environment is very, very different.
How can software engineers develop leadership and management skills?
I think they can. And here also I'd like to start from definition of leadership and management, right? Because it's very confusing nowadays. And I'd like to refer to Management 3.0, right? As for me, as the foundation of management. They say that management organizations need managers. So leader is not a position, right? And they call overall management like manage system, lead people. That's the phrase they use. So if you manage, sometimes we can meet managers who manage people. Don't manage people. That's micromanagement, right? That's wrong approach to do. Lead people, manage system. That's why overall, if you want to improve management skills, and management is more about organizing systems, for me, it's more like hard skills. It's very similar to architecture. That's why I loved and fell in love with management, because for me, it's like software architecture. I'm designing the operating system for organization. It's called business operation system. Before that, I was creating like our software development framework, principles, standards. For me, it's part of the system, how people operate. And management 3.0 says software development is a system with that has on input information, output innovation, and people are agents of those systems, right? And you set constraints, you define processes. The system, performance of system is limited by its bottleneck, right? In Lean, they call it Kaizen. So your goal as a manager to improve performance of system by defining constraints, removing bottlenecks. And it's really, for me, it's really engineering thing. And some people, they don't want to be a manager because they see other managers who are more humanitarian and they like to talk, speak. They're not efficient. Like they work hard, but not smart. And they are everywhere, loud, meetings. It's not the way, right? If you choose this right approach to management, to my opinion, then you can use your engineering skills and achieve much more. For this reason, I convinced different developers to become managers. Not convinced, I recommended, right? But they then were convinced that they can do much more as a managers, still be the technology. Because alone, right, you can produce some small piece of code. But if you have a team, you can do much more team of team, departments, programs, value stream, right? You can do a lot. But using the right approach is very important. So that's why learning management skills for me are the same as learning development and coding skills. And practicing. Just use the right approach of management. And that will be easier. Then the part of leadership, right? So manage people, manage system, lead people. What does it mean, lead people, right? Some people think that people should follow me, right? I think it's a mistake. People should follow vision, not you, right? It's more authoritative style. I mean, it's like because maybe of, I know, self-esteem low for different reasons, some people want to be leaders for others. Follow me, like Jesus. But even Jesus, like, was leading people to some vision, right? To some idea. This is why to be a leader, you need to be able to understand where do you lead the people, right? The direction. Have this big picture thinking. Then you need to understand people, because for manager, people are resources. For leader, people are people. You need empathy. And also, I think very crucial thing for a leader, because depending on your position, you're leading a different amount of people. So now I'm leading 100 and something people. Some point I was leading 2 or 3 or 5 people or only one. But it's different from like it's complicated to do, because sometimes you fail. And it's hard to fail. And I think the most important skill, not a skill, but attribute of a leader, is maybe sometimes it's disposition, but it's called vitality quotient. Maybe you heard about it. It's like IQ and VQ. IQ is like how smart you are. Sometimes people say EQ, but some psychologists says that it's not exist. But overall, empathy is important. But vitality quotient, it's ability to fail without losing enthusiasm. It's very important, right? IQ is also important, but when you can lead people fail and then continue, then it's the foundation for you to be a great leader. So that's the vision. You lead people, you understand them, work with people, and you fail, but you learn and continue together with them, then you can become a leader. It's also practicing, but I think here with leadership, it's very important to understand those dispositions. Because some people, they naturally are better about it. The worst thing is when they have low IQ and high VQ, so that's very dangerous. But overall, those people are naturally good at leading. They may be not good at managing. Like engineers can be good at managing, but they may struggle with leading. But right management approach can help you to spend less time on leading, right? And with the right system, leadership becoming less, you spend less time on it. But it's still very important, because it's very like human thing, lead others. That's why it's also about practicing, but you have to understand here your disposition and be very, very careful. I'm not sure if it's possible to improve it. You have to try, practice, and be very confident. Maybe go to therapy sometimes, because if you have issues with self-esteem, and you have to first be a leader for yourself, learn how to fail by yourself without losing enthusiasm. Then you can do it with others, because if you cannot do it by yourself and trying to lead others, oh, it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous.
How significant is participation in industry conferences and networking for a software engineer's career?
I think it is very significant. I can't imagine my life, especially in the very beginning of my career, without conferences. We were a small boutique agency, and it's not like I had tons of managers or people who can inspire me or teach me something. I need to find another sources of inspiration, of ideas. Books are very theoretical. So in conferences, for example, you can learn the real life experience before it's written to some book. Because in the book, it can be not written or written in 10 years, right? So it's real life experience. Also, it's inspiration, there's ideas. People who work together on the same problem, different way. You feel like they have the same problems as you are, but they solve in different ways. I mean, I really like talking to people regarding that. So I'm not like a networking person, like salesperson can talk about anything, but I really like to talk about real life problems, things that the real experience, and sometimes even about hobby and leisure. For example, how do you spend your leisure time as a developer? How do you remove the stress? Right? How do you do all those things? And you can also get this experience there. And the main, I think, mistake is when people are, what I see, people don't want to attend conferences because they think about it as lectures. They want somebody to put information in their head. the structure in a way so they can understand it. They think that it's like university. No, you have to understand that it's like a tool. The conference is a tool for you and others to achieve some goals. If you understand it right, you use it right. Some conferences are good, some bad. Some formats are different. Maybe the domain of the conference. Maybe you're in DevOps conference. Maybe go to Agile conference to go to another. Try another conference, but the reason, the purpose of these conferences is not to teach you, is to share experience, inspire, network, right? And all these things, they grow your career capital. All the things in a short period of time, you can grow it significantly. And I think this is great. Just understand the purpose and it will work for you. So people are more introverted and they just afraid, I don't know, the big amount of people, crowds. Maybe sometimes they see how easy other people, more extroverted, communicated with others. That's why they like don't like maybe to compete with them, right? So they think it's like, yeah, that's a job, right? Define your own pace. If you're introverted, don't compare yourself to others. Compare yourself with your in past. That's it. That's you. Accept who you are. Choose your own pace. Talk to people you like. Get information you want. It's like it's your choice what you do there, right? Just not ignore it because you are not extroverted. You are different. It's absolutely fine to be like that. Just use the capture benefits and career capital in your own way in conferences.
What kind of person is Andriy? How do you see yourself?
So I think about myself as somebody who is between management and technology, who brings to engineering world joy of management, right? So I'm trying to make management for engineers in technology more enjoyable, more accessible, so other can understand that it's not so hard. I'm like enabler for others, and I think for customers, for different other engineers that can help with direction in hard times, because I feel like different people, especially engineers who are very introverted, who are close-minded, I'm trying to give them these principles like in the very easy way. Growth mindset, growth mindset, right? First 20 hours, all the stuff. It's very easy. Just try and practice to enable them. So, and I really enjoy when not just like people happy, but I see myself as a coach of sport team, right? I feel like when team lose, then I'm losing. And team wins, then team is winning, right? They are winners, not I. That's why I like this approach. Like for me, delivery manager, COO, I'm a coach. The software development team sport, right? I want to build my teams. I'm still sometimes practicing delivery management and I'm enjoying so much because I feel like they're performing, growing personally and enjoying, right? So they like that they grow. They do something useful, meaningful for the world. And they have this freedom to express themselves for creativity in this way. And the same in organization. So I'm managing recruiters, accountants, structure behind me in delivery. It's like head of DevOps, head of BMO, head of BA, head of all the stuff. And now I'm moving to sales team. They still need me to help them to grow. And when I build this system, the team of people, like 1 + 1 more than equal to 2, and not just like personally, but I feel like professionally also they're growing. Oh, I'm doing so much. Also, as the same with the life, right? I'm like this Boy Scout mindset when Boy Scout leaves his campground cleaner than it was before. That's why before the war, I was participating somehow in political life in my own city. Now I'm trying a little bit in more broad way in country level, but it's almost impossible. But this was one of my hobbies, right? For this reason, I learned urban planning because in Ukraine, we have a lot of post-USSR things. And when you travel, you see different other countries, European countries, America, you compare the architecture, how everything organized, why the roads are safer, why it's cleaner, and the reason behind that. And I'm trying to advocate this stuff in my own country, supporting different public organizations as a sponsor, as participating sometimes, since I'm personally participating, so for me it's also very important. So I see, like, I want to participate somehow in Ukraine 2.0, or maybe it's even 3.0, but I really want to see my country different from what it is right now. That's why it's my maybe hobby more right now than not sport or something else, but it's, I think it's my pain, and I want to be related to that. I want to contribute to it. I still, I mean, it's a very hard question, but it makes me, it gives me sense of the life together with my professional activities.
What's about your work-life balance? Do you have some hints for us?
There are a lot. It depends mainly on the problem, but the last tip for myself I opened, it's I read the book called The Power of When. I mean, I think it's not very scientific, but the principles behind that are very important. So the book, it was written by the guy called The Sleep Doctor. And he said that we have different chronotypes. Every people had different chronotypes. And he said there's four chronotypes: life, bear, wolf, and dolphin. And he drew the diagram so that your energy level across the day, right? Wolves more night person, lion more evening person, bears more like less energy person, and dolphin is something is still not clear for me, but I mean these people. And it's very important to understand who you are. But the main principle that it's really connected to Agile, it says, don't manage your time, manage your energy, right? Because you have, it's the same with sprint planning, right? Don't manage, micromanage time. You have a time box that's backlog. Manage your energy efficiently, because you can burn your energy in a few sprints, team will be exhausted. Manage your energy and you can achieve the same things or even more with better efficiency. And time is just something that is given to us, so we cannot manage it. We just can utilize our energy in more efficient way. But when we know where we are more efficient, and also like eating right food, sleeping right time, using maybe power nap. And for me, I started to go to gym, like a basic gym gymnastics at the time, and my energy is the lowest in the evening between 5 and 6, and the second, the last time of the day, the evening time, it's much more productive for me now. And I stopped doing some super smart thing there, and I enjoy it now. So it's really great. Just stop lying to you, accept yourself, and define your day schedule or work with your colleagues in the way you can, in the way you are productive. For example, when Julia told me that we have to move the date of podcast, right? I'll ask you, can we do it in the morning? I will be so much more productive than after lunch. So I was really happy, and thank you for being able to do it in the morning, because for me it's very, very important and makes it much easier.
A book or books you would recommend to our listeners?
Book number one is So Good So They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport. It's about this concept of cross-brain passion mindset with different interesting real-life examples of how different people approached their life and were successfully and no. I think it's like only for listening, it's between 5-6 hours, so it's not a big book. Or you can watch Cal Newport some podcasts and YouTube video with where he explained to Google people. He's like an PhD in this area. And he also had nice books like Deep Work and other things. So I think it's like really, if you are feel like that you are a pragmatic guy and you like pragmatic books and approaches, then I think this book can be really good for you. And for leaders, my favorite approach for leadership, it's extreme ownership, about how U.S., I don't remember how it's called, but how U.S. Navy's win, right? How they approach working in a team. And there you can find some inspiration and principles. But overall, they say there's no bad teams, only bad leaders. And this phrase is my favorite.
Andre, thank you so much for this amazing discussion. It was a great pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much.
For me too. Thank you for inviting.
Bye-bye.
Bye.